This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster, only working from a hotel in Bristol where I'm doing Baseball Tonight all this week. And Taylor Schwenk. Taylor Schwenk, big fan of the Baltimore Orioles, who yesterday, at the end of a phenomenal season, were eliminated. So many Bleacher tweeters chiming in, checking on you, Taylor. How you doing today?
You know, Buster, I'm doing all right. I said yesterday in the podcast, you know, Dolly's whining in the background, too. She's also very sad about the end of the season. But we mourned the season on Sunday, really. So it wasn't as painful as it could have. As they could have made it, honestly. I mean, imagine losing in like the ninth inning, eighth inning. That would have been really dreadful. So they made it
was
easy.
Was there a part of you that was relieved that it didn't get dragged out in Game Three, or that the Rangers put up all these runs early?
Yeah, for sure. I'd already invested a ton of emotional energy in it. So the fact that I really didn't have to do that last night was freeing. You know.
Yeah, Dolly is inconsolable.
She can't handle it. She cannot believe that Cedric Mullins was a no-show in the ALDS. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Cedric Mullins couldn't handle it. I don't know if you saw his quotes after the game. He basically was chastising himself. All right, this is how it played out. Rangers, Orioles, bottom of the first inning. Corey Seager, yep, that guy again, gave him a lead.
1-1 to Corey Seager, and the lefty drives this one to right. He has given up a homer. Seager gets the party started with a massive shot that traveled 445 feet. It's 1-0 Rangers.
Yeah, that's our friend Carl Ravitch on ESPN Radio. In the second inning, Nathaniel Lowe had a plate appearance of 15 pitches, and he lined out to left field. But after that, the Rangers got to Dean Kramer.
The 0-1 with the bases loaded here in the bottom of the second. Texas up 1-0. Pull down the line. Fair ball. That's going to bring in everybody. No holding at third. It bounced off the wall short of reaching the outfield. Two RBI double for Mitch Garver. And the Rangers early on have gotten to Kramer and lead it 3-0.
And then came the punctuation mark.
He's ready on the 1-2. Garcia hits this one high and deep to left. Really high, really far, and gone! Adolis Garcia! And the Texas Rangers now lead it 6-0 in the second inning.
And this is what it sounded like in the ninth inning.
Leclerc is ready. Here it comes. Strike three! And the Rangers sweep another. They are rolling into the LCS. They beat Baltimore 7-1.
After the game, Rangers manager Bruce Bochy was asked about the possibility of a Texas-Houston American League Championship Series.
To get too far ahead of ourselves, were you guys even thinking about an ALCS matchup, a potential rematch with Houston?
I haven't been thinking about anything but trying to win this series. I'm a game at a time, series at a time, and that's as far as I can go. But, you know, could happen. You don't know. But, you know, I'm just excited that we're in the championship series.
Nathan Eovaldi talked about the Rangers' progression.
These are the moments that you play for as an athlete. You know, I love pitching in these big moments, and, you know, I feel like I'm a big competitor, and that competitive definitely comes out, and, you know, I enjoy having, you know, these big games that are the big deciding games on the line, whether we're down 0-2 or we're up 2-0, you know, definitely very thankful, and from the very beginning of the season, we set a plan. You know, we came in here as one, you know, that was the message from spring training, and we're here now. I think everybody was able to buy in, and you see how well we've been able to play right now going on into the postseason, and we just got to make sure we keep building that momentum.
Yeah, the Rangers offense took out the Orioles very quickly in this game, but Eovaldi was tremendous. Seven strong innings for him. Max Scherzer gave an update on his status heading into the American League Championship Series.
Today was the first day I can finally say I felt like normal in my program. So really bodes well for me to be able to throw some game tomorrow, extend my pitch count, and do the best I can to get ready.
What do you feel like is a realistic time frame?
Let's see how I do on the simian tomorrow. You know, staying here today, you know, I feel good about it. I feel good about what I can do in the future here, but, you know, need to throw the sim game and get out of it.
Yeah, the bottom line is he's not going to have a lot of time to build up his innings, but You do wonder if the Rangers will put him on the roster as a trusted pitcher that Bochy could turn to. It's the end of a phenomenal season for the Baltimore Orioles, and Brandon Hyde was asked a question about whether or not he would consider this a success.
As you look back, will you consider this season a success?
How can I not? We're supposed to win 76 games, won 101, won the American League East. I'm proud of, really proud of our group. They defied all the odds. Nobody gave us a chance. These guys played their butts off for 6 months. We just didn't play well for these last three, unfortunately. But it's definitely a successful season, and these guys are going to be really good going forward.
Yep, no doubt about it. We're going to be talking coming up with Eduardo Perez about what's next with the Baltimore Orioles. On Tuesday, we had Game 3 of the Astros and Twins series, and similarly, the Astros jumped on the Twins early in the game. Kyle Tucker gave them a lead in the top of the first.
Top of the first inning, 2 men in scoring position for the American League RBI leader this year, Kyle Tucker. And a pitch. Swing and a base hit, lined into left. That will score Altuve. Alvarez to third, stops there. An RBI single for Tucker, 1-0 Houston.
Dave O'Brien on ESPN Radio. That rally would continue.
Here's the 2-1. Swinging a high deep drive left field. He ripped it. Wallner turning. See you later. That gets into the second level. That is a 3-run shot by Jose Abreu.
Alex Bregman did some damage in the top of the fifth.
The 1-1. Swinging a high fly ball that's deep down the left field line. Wallner back on the track up against the wall, leaping, and that ball is gone. A home run. That was up there all afternoon. And Bregman hammers a home run to make it 5-0.
And Christian Javier was terrific in the 5 innings that he had. Martin Maldonado, the Houston catcher, helping him usher through a bases-loaded jam in the bottom of the fifth.
Castro, Julian, and Polanco loading up the bases, third to first, the pitch home. Swung on and missed. He swung on and missed it for out number 3. And Javier once again gets out of a jam.
And Yordan Alvarez would do more damage.
Another 2-2 on the way. Swinging a high fly ball right field. That one deep. Backing up Kepler. Turning now. That ball's gone. Home run. That got into the porch in right field. And a home run for Alvarez. His third hit today. That's a solo shot to make it 7-1.
Jose Abreu would hit another home run. The Astros win this game 9-1. They'll play game 4 later today on Wednesday. Dusty Baker was asked about Christian Javier.
You know, he was good. He was very good. You know, he had a good breaking ball. Maldi directed him through the game. And that, you know, put speed on his fastball if you're getting that breaking ball over the plate. And, you know, that was much needed from us, you know, for us. You know, the runs that we got for him and for us are much needed.
You can see the confidence in the way the Astros are playing these days. But Dusty Baker was asked about that.
You guys come in confident regardless of where it is in the situation, and you just don't ever seem to be fazed.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of club, you know, we have. I mean, it's a very confident club, not a cocky club. You know, we don't showboat too much. We just play.
Twins pitcher Sonny Gray was hanging a lot of breaking balls. He was asked about his poor performance.
I felt really good going into it. I felt calm, collected, confident. Even after the first, I was trying to do the best that I could to move on from it, continue to just make the same pitches and execute the same pitches that I felt like I was early. I knew giving up a 4 spot in the first is not great. It's not something that you're looking to do.
Here's Twins manager Rocco Baldelli.
The Astros did a good job of jumping out there early and finding ways to score some runs. And we were probably a ground ball away from, you know, being out of that inning or being very close to being out of that inning, a play that, you know, we're going to make almost every time. And we didn't make it today. And it ended up leading to those runs being on the board. Overall, it was a difficult day to hit. So them jumping out early was very, very important. And whichever team did that was going to definitely be in the driver's seat, because the game times that we have right now and our ballpark make it very difficult to see the ball and to put a lot of good swings on the ball in a row.
Yeah, all kinds of shadows for sure in that the game between the Astros and the Twins. We have 3 games scheduled for today. The early game being the Braves and Phillies playing in game Game 3 of their series. That's going to be followed by the Twins and the Astros. And then later, we've got the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks, one win away from advancing to the National League Championship Series. A couple of other notes. Brewers president Matt Arnold expects that Corbin Burnes will return in 2024. He has not yet talked to Craig Counsell, the Brewers manager, about whether or not he's going to stay. As we've talked about in the podcast, Counsell is going to be one of the big free agents of this offseason, potentially, if he doesn't re-sign with the Brewers. And I wanted to mention this. Rintaro Sasaki, the Japanese high school career home run record holder, did not submit his application for the Nippon Professional Baseball Draft and has stated his intention to go to an American college to play baseball. Sasaki is the consensus top prospect among graduating Japanese high school players and was the presumed favorite to be picked first in the upcoming NPB draft. And this got my attention, Taylor. The team considered to be the front runner to get him in college? Vanderbilt. Oh, yeah.
Let's go. Man, how exciting would that be? Hot international prospect leading the squad?
Oh, man, yeah. I might cover the Commodores next year. Yeah. You know, if he winds up coming over.
Yeah, well, we'll dedicate a whole segment to it every week. We'll just keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I'll get Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt coach, to be on to give us updates on him, right?
Absolutely.
All right, what else you got?
Buster, new episode of the College Game Day podcast. There's 14 undefeated teams left in college football. Which of those teams are going to stay undefeated through the rest of the season? We're 6 weeks in. Pete Thamel, Reese Davis, and Bill Connolly are going to discuss that. You can listen to that on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Eduardo Perez is an analyst for ESPN, and in recent days he's been working on radio side, the series between the Minnesota Twins and the Houston Astros. Eduardo, how are you doing this morning?
What's going on, Buster? I'm doing well.
I don't know how you function. People always say that, you know, about me, that I function without sleep. You function without sleep more than any person I know.
Well, I think the same of you. So I think we're on the same page. Look, no matter what, tonight, 6 o'clock game central, I got a 6 a.m. flight tomorrow morning. So let's go.
All right. Before we get into the series you're doing, and I have a lot of questions about that series. Let's talk about the Texas Rangers. You talk about, it feels like every year we get a team that gets on a roll and they become this unstoppable force. That seems to be what it is with the Texas Rangers offense led by Bruce Bochy.
It really is. I mean, you look at a team like the Texas Rangers, where we pretty much, and I'll tell you the truth, I thought after the season where they lost 3 out of 4 in Seattle and they had to go all the way to Tampa, I was like, there's no chance.
You wrote them off.
Look, I think a lot of people wrote them off.
Yeah.
And I wrote them off. It wasn't just because they were going to be, if it was jet lagged or whatever, or 3 out of 4 there. It was that I didn't think that the pitching would be able to sustain. Nathan Eovaldi was not that good down the stretch. And then all of a sudden, here comes important games, and he's pitching down in the zone. He's controlling the slab, as Coney would say. I'm starting to talk like Coney a little bit, but it was just the fact that they knew that this was where they belonged. And the leadership of Seager and Semien on the offensive side has played. The emergence of Carter has been unbelievable. And to be straight, I think the players trust Bruce so much that they don't doubt any move that's being made late in games. And they all know that they're in the right position because Bruce is at the helm.
So we had, as you remember, at the beginning of the year, we had the Rangers on our first Sunday night game. And I remember being around that team early. And, you know, I mean, let's face it. It's a lot of free agents and other pieces put together by general manager Chris Young. And after being around him for a couple of days and talking with Marcus Semien, and then you look over and there's Corey Seager and there's Nathan Eovaldi, I said to Tim Hyers, their hitting coach, I was like, you guys, there's a toughness in this group. Like, there are some real baseball people here. Marcus Semien never smiles, it seems. He is a serious baseball guy. Corey Seager, all he wants to do, it feels like, when he wakes up every day is hit. On and on and on. And so the question for me was always about the pitching. But in terms of being postseason ready, culturally as a personality, that was never in doubt for me. That is a tough group of guys.
That is. My biggest question coming into the year was, okay, how's the offense going to be after, after Garcia?
Yeah.
I just thought that a really good 1-4. And then after that, it's like, okay, where's it going to come from? Is Jonah Heim for real? He proved that he was. Is Josh Young for real? He proved that he was, and then he went on the IL. And that's when, I was like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. Garcia goes on the IL. They're in real trouble. Then they both come back like on the same day, if I'm not mistaken. And it was uphill from then on. It was like, okay, our offense has taken off. Josh Young, if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, I mean, he's the American League MVP. I mean, the American League Rookie of the Year. And instead, he goes on the IL. He comes back, and he comes back strong. He comes back with timing.
With pins in his thumb, nonetheless, right? In his thumb.
Well, I mean, what do you expect? He's a Texas Tech Raider.
Former Texas high school quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're that tough. And I just love the fact that they have played to Bruce. And now the story, if the Astros win one more, is going to be the 74-year-old manager against a 68-year-old manager. And it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be pretty cool age-wise to see those two go at it, to see who goes back to the World Series.
All right. A couple of specific questions I have for you about last night's game. The biggest moment, I thought, resulted in a plate appearance that had an out, and that was Nathaniel Lowe, 15-pitch plate appearance, because the next 16 pitches against Dean Kramer, they scored 5 runs. I mean, that felt like it teed up that rally so well and basically put the Orioles away. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you. I'll be honest with you. I was a big fan yesterday of Dean Kramer. I for everything that he stood for and what he was going through personally with his family and everything. And I was wishing that he would have given, the Orioles 5 strong. Not that he would have won the game, but given the Orioles 5 strong. Instead, the at-bat there of Nathaniel was impressive. It ended up in a fly ball to left. But the meaning in what he did right there, he ate up. He gave him a stressful, not just inning. He gave him 2 stressful innings. He gave him a stressful at-bat that equaled an inning. And then he was just worn down, and you could just see. It's sort of like, remember those old school baseball games that we used to play, RBI it was called, and the pitcher was just exhausted, the body would just be breathing in heavily. Well, that was Dean Kramer yesterday after, I would say, the 11th pitch of that at-bat.
Yeah, I loved how the crowd got into it. And with Eovaldi, I was thinking about this because we just saw Max Fried miss 18 days. He comes back, and the other night he was not sharp, right? He didn't really have his curveball. He didn't really have a slider. He didn't have his command. And I was thinking about this with Eovaldi, who came off the injured list on September 5th. And to your point, what you said before is right. Like, he really struggled coming off the injured list. He was getting his brains beat in. But you know what? We're now a month into it, right? Where he's healthy and he's off the injured list, and it feels like he's got that rhythm back. And oh, by the way, because the Rangers clinched last night, he can come back and pitch on full rest in game 1 in the American League Championship Series.
I know. That's the really cool part. So, and that, now the biggest question is, because they have played so much, they've been so consistent, going at it day after day. Yes, they've had a day off on travel day. They had a day off before the wild card as well. But they've been playing baseball. The Orioles had to wait. Now the Texas Rangers have to wait. And this is the part where a lot of teams and a lot of conversations are, are they going to be just as sharp? Is the energy going to be there? I think it is. I think it's really interesting how this is all playing out. I think it's going to be a battle of Hall of Famers and a battle in Texas. That's going to come down to who is going to be the sharpest. And if Nathan comes back on game one, you know, and if the Houston Astros clinch today, then you're looking at Verlander, Eovaldi, most likely, and both of them will be on full rest, and it's going to be quite a battle.
Yeah, I all along, knowing the history between the teams, knowing the toughness of the Rangers, the experience of the Astros, it's kind of been the series I've been rooting for a little bit. Before we move on past this series, let's talk about the Orioles going forward. You know, I was asked this question on SportsCenter last night, and they were like, you know, what's ahead for the Orioles? I'm like, great things. It's this great, great core of players. Then you add Jackson Holliday as their shortstop next year. You move Gunnar Henderson to third base. But we still have the open question of whether or not owner John Angelos is going to spend money to support the team. They clearly need starting pitching. They need some sort of additions during the course of the offseason. We read from John Angelos in that piece in the New York Times in August where he said essentially that he wouldn't be able to afford the players. Eduardo, they have one player under contract for next year, one guy, James McCann, who they got in a salary dump. They, unlike the Atlanta Braves, they haven't signed a single player. We don't know what's going to happen. For me, it's a team of incredible potential. Think of the Astros in 2015, but now it's the owner's job. The players did their job. The staff did their job. Brandon Hyde, great job. Now it's the owner's got to step up. What do you think?
I think they will. I think this is – I really do. I think when Angelos knew and had made those comments, they weren't packing in the stadium yet. There wasn't a culture that looked like was still ready. When you talk about the Baltimore Orioles at the beginning of the season, not a lot of people had them pegged to win the division or even be ready for this year. They were moving on the right direction. They thought it was going to be 2024, where possibly it could be a wild card, 2025, where they can start that domination. It's very similar to the Houston Astros, where Mike Elias and Sig Meidahl were a part of it. Because in 2015, the Houston Astros weren't supposed to be in the postseason. They weren't. And yet they were there. This was their 2015 of Houston. This was the 2015 where not a lot of players were signed to multi-year deals yet. Jose Altuve had a very team-friendly one. But that was about it. Dallas Keuchel was starting to emerge. And now all of a sudden, we're seeing that 2015 team of Baltimore that's going to be sustainable for the next six, possibly 7 years, and depending on if they get those multi-year deals. And we thought the same thing of Jim Crane. We didn't think he was spending. Remember, their budget at one time was $14 million. And all of a sudden, little by
they
little.
They finished one season with one guy making $1 million, 2014, I think it was, Jose Veras. The reliever was the only player making $1 million.
I'll tell you what year that was. That was 2013. I witnessed it because I was the bench coach that year. it was that bad. And so yes, I do believe they're going to spend because it's going to bring them a lot of money. But it all depends also on their TV rights and how does that work.
Yeah, after the game last night, Brandon Hyde was asked the question about whether or not this year was a success, and I was like, come on, really? Of course it was. It was a great year for the Orioles.
It was a great year. Great year.
Yep. All right. As we shift to Astros and Twins, simple question for you. Right now, is Jordan Alvarez the best hitter in the universe? You're talking about someone who in this series, 6-for-11 with 4 home runs.
I believe so. And you know what at-bat out of all impressed me the most was actually the broken bat out. Because he's not afraid to get jammed. He's not afraid. He is not conscious of the inside pitch. Now, you want to go in there, you better not miss. Because if you miss.
And the Twins tried to do it again and again and again last night.
And what happened? I mean, double. And I'll tell you what, I'm counting that error a double. because I thought that should have been called a double. It was a hard hit ball on the ground. Yes, negative launch angle, whatever it may be. But Kirilloff at first base, that opened the gates on that one. But that was a tough play down the line. It was a tough play. But just the fact of how good Yordan Alvarez has been in the clutch situations. And I asked this question yesterday. Would you rather have in a clutch situation, left-handed hitter-wise? Would you rather have Shohei Ohtani? Would you rather have Juan Soto? Would you rather have Bryce Harper or Yordan Alvarez? I'll take Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
In a clutch situation.
Yes.
Then after that, it'll be Soto. But for me, that's how I would at least do it. And I can't say about Shohei because the reality is we've never seen him in the postseason. So for me right now, it's Yordan Alvarez. He is steady. It doesn't matter what kind of pitcher is on the mound. I asked him when they brought in Fiobar the other day. I said in Spanish, so had you faced him before? He goes, I don't know. And I was like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, when they brought the lefty, what did you think? He said, I started laughing because I'm like, they try this all the time and it doesn't matter. And I said, do you realize that Fiobar had not given up a home run on a breaking pitch to a lefty since 22? And he goes, was it me that hit it? He had no idea. So he's like, I don't care. It does not matter. If it has to pass through the zone, the ball does not have an owner. And it's for me to have. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great answer. And he continues to just awe us during this postseason.
Yeah, he really is remarkable. And unfortunately for any team facing them, and right now it's the Twins and Rocco Baldelli, their manager, Jose Abreu is making all those decisions about what to do with the middle of that lineup. Very complicated. Tip my hat to you, because early in the year, you know, we had the Astros. And as you remember, it took 51 games for Abreu to hit his first homer with the Astros. He was struggling. You got idiots like me wondering if he's completely done. You know, is this contract a total bust? And I remember you talking about how he was wearing himself out. That this guy who had such a layer of accountability, leadership, felt terrible that he wasn't producing. So he's taken extra batting practice. And you were the first one I heard diagnosis. Yeah, he is just driving himself crazy. So eventually what happens is he gets a sore back. They put him on the injured list. Dana Brown, their general manager, told me that they really feel like during that time it gave him a chance to breathe and to sort of take a step back. And since he came off the injured list in mid-August, he's got an OPS close to 850. He's hitting home runs. He's driving the runs. He's back to the Jose Abreu that we've seen. So if you're Rocco Baldelli in tonight's game, if you're Bruce Bochy moving forward, all of a sudden, you got Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker and Jose Abreu. And so that decision to pitch around the two left-handed hitters suddenly becomes a lot more complicated with Abreu mashing.
Yeah, Rocco definitely has a Cuban Missile Crisis problem. He does. Yesterday was a classic case of it. Look, Jose Abreu, and I remember when I saw him in Houston right now for the postseason, and I remember asking him in spring training, I asked him in West Palm Beach. I said, hey man, you happy to be here? And he goes, happy. I'm with the world champions. I said, my season isn't a 6-month season anymore. It's a 7-month season. I mean, just think about that comment. He knew that there are no plans to be made in October because he's with the Houston Astros. And this was before all those injuries. This was before him wearing himself out. This was him getting ready. I told him, don't forget you're 36. You're 36. You're not 26 anymore. You got it. Now you know that you have to slow it down. And he's like, yeah, I learned the hard way. But he's ready. And they challenged him with fastballs. They challenged him with fastballs up. When they threw him the slider, he was ready for it. And then the two balls that he hit were the hardest balls that had been hit here in postseason history. That just tells you how hard those two balls were. One went 442, the other one 440. They joined each other, but they definitely had the right trajectory. It wasn't pop-ups. It was line drives out of here, and they were loud. And you're right. Kyle Tucker has to be ecstatic to be able to see Abreu swing the bat that way, because now that'll take Tucker to another level. And that's where the Houston Astros are dangerous. And let's not forget, Alex Bregman is also getting on base for for Yordan Alvarez, making it even more difficult for pitchers to pitch around Yordan.
Yeah, that's Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, to me, are two examples of what you and I have been talking about with the Astros the last 6 weeks, that they were bored during the regular season. And all of a sudden, you see Alex Bregman, the quality of his at-bats go from here to here. You know I love my comps. I'll ask manager Brian Snitker, drives him crazy in our meetings, and I'll say, hey, who does Strider remind you of? Who does this one? He's like, don't make me ask, think about that. You know who Jose Abreu reminds me of totally with his mentality as a hitter? Your dad.
I know. Okay?
I mean, when I've read about your dad, I obviously didn't cover him as a player, but I always heard about how he had just a knack and an understanding for driving in a run. And that is Jose Abreu, what he needs to do in a given plate appearance.
So really cool story. In 2009, it's the first time I ever laid eyes on Jose Abreu. And it was in Barcelona, Spain. We're at the World Cup, and I'm managing Team Puerto Rico. And in that team, Cespedes, Gurriel, I mean, you can nail this Martin. It just unbelievable players. Players that played in Japan, Despaigne, Cepeda. I mean, it was a loaded team. And when I saw Abreu, I immediately called my dad and I said, first I found out where Abreu was from in Cuba because I wanted to know. I was like, oh my gosh, is that like a sibling of mine? Is there something that I don't know? Did my dad go to Cuba? I'm serious. He would drive the ball to right field with power, runners on base. He knew exactly what to do. He would drive it right over the second baseman. He would be gap to gap. He beat us to the point where we lost that game 10-0. And it would have been more, but there was the 10-run rule. So we played 7 innings, and I was happy we played 7 innings. And we ended up actually traveling later on with them because we passed, we qualified. But it was Jose Abreu that I was the most impressed with. And just, man, he looked like a relative of mine. And I told him. I told him then, and I asked him. I quizzed him. I questioned him because it was so impressive. It was so impressive what he was doing at the plate.
Yeah, 100%. It's fun to watch him hit, and you just see his mind turning. As they say, that's what I always, with your dad, always see. You can see your dad's mind turning. What do I need to do to get this runner in from third base? Yeah. Give me 2 30-second quick ones on this. A lot of complaining about the playoff format. These top seeds getting knocked out. My suggestion is to sort of veer around the whining, because I get tired of the whining about this. Just give the number one and number two seeds the choice of whether or not they want to play in the wild card round or take the bye. And every time, you and I both know, they will always take the bye. What do you think? Always.
They will always take the bye. So why even? Why even give them the choice? It's a no-brainer.
Because I'm the fan complaining about this. Okay. It drives me nuts.
Okay, so everybody had their own thought and theory, right? You had the Braves playing against each other. They opened it up for the fans. The other teams, it was like, we're going to practice. We're going to play inter-squad. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Dusty Baker, when we asked them, what did they do? First day, they took the day off right after. The next day, the pitchers came in. The hitters took the day off again. So you have two off days for the hitters. Then you come in and you just practice, you play. There's a lot of simulators right now. We've seen them. Traject, which is a machine that can mimic everything that any pitcher in the big leagues, their stuff on the mound behind the scenes. There are so many ways to get ready. The bottom line is you have to know where you are and what environment you're in. And I think that's the most overwhelming thing for a lot of teams. But to be able to turn it on and off, it's not for everyone. But the organizations have to realize, okay, how do we do this? There's so many ways of doing it, so many ways of preparing. And maybe it's even before the season ends that you're preparing the players, maybe with 2 days off in a row. And then you get back in there so you know what the feeling is like. Look, that's part of the game. But that's not going to change. It'll never change, and it's a constant reminder of how hard this game is.
Yeah, and maybe I'm sensitive because my son, the Braves fan, has been texting me complaining about the off days and the flow. Then I'm like, dude, Stop. Your team would choose the off days if they were given a choice in the buy or not. And last one, Craig Counsell is officially a free agent. I'm hearing that around the edges that he's in a position where he's going to set a new ceiling for managers. Someone told me this week he thinks that, you know, the question is going to come down to whether or not Mark Attanasio, owner of the Brewers, is going to be willing to pay him a huge contract. I think he's going to wind up leaving. What about you?
Wow. Look, he's got a situation in a spot where if he wants, he could take 2 years off if he wants, and he's still going to be desirable whenever he wants. And I understand that the Mets job is open. I understand that there, that's probably will be too expensive for Milwaukee, but he can also go watch his sons play college ball. There's so many options he can do. And then if he comes back in 2 years, he can command that high salary. That's how good he has been. That's how good he has set it up for himself. And what a position to be in that you can be able to do that and still be widely known. And he's got the personality that if he wants to still stay in the game, he can do it on the television side as well. So there are so many ways and so many things that Craig Counsell can do, but highly respected. And maybe the right time is to go to New York. Maybe the right time is to take some time off, or maybe the right time is to stay right back at home in Milwaukee, where he grew up and he cheered for his Brewers. It's a great position to be in, and I wish him the best on it.
Yeah, he's got the stature if he wants to. He can tell the Mets, to Steve Cohen, you know what? If you want me to come and manage your team, you're going to give me $10 million a year for 5 years. And you know what? I think Steve Cohen might do it. Because he right now, and immediately, Craig would be the most powerful manager in the game.
Well, if that does that happen, Buster, I know I have to land the plane on this one. If that does happen, then good for him and good for baseball, because managers and coaches, I believe, at the major league level, are severely underpaid compared to football, basketball, and even college football and basketball. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, when I mentioned the $10 million salary, that Buster, it's been great working with you on Sunday Night Baseball. I'm going to get into managing. All right. Like Peter Moylan is waiting for you, is waiting. Eduardo, thank you so much for getting up early. Say hi to Peter.
Where's Moylan?
I'm right here, buddy.
Hey, there we are.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Peter Moylan pitched for years with the Atlanta Braves. And Pete, first off, welcome. How you doing?
Really good. Really, really good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And I just got to double check. Is this you? Give a listen. That was the sound of you, right? Were you standing on a seat when you were doing that?
I absolutely was standing on a seat. The emotions got the best of me. I thought the game was going a certain direction, and then all of a sudden Travis d'Arnaud comes up and gets us a bit of life, and then Austin Riley sends one into orbit. I've never been to a game as a fan, Buster. Every time I'm at the stadium, I'm either at a conference room or I'm taking notes or I'm getting ready for a post-game show. I'm never actually – or I'm calling the game. I've never had – an opportunity, might be ADD, call it whatever you want, but I've never had an opportunity to sit down and watch a whole game. And it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, tell me about the experience at the ballpark as that's coming. From the point that they're down 4-0, Sarah Langs, our friend, pegged the win probability for the Phillies in the bottom of the sixth inning at 94%.
Yeah.
So the swing of emotions that you saw right down to that final play.
It was so quiet. Early on at the stadium, I think everybody was a little worried. They were so concerned about what happened last year, and it was looking the same way. You know, everybody looks at that 5-day break as a Achilles heel for the teams that win the division. So for that storyline to be squashed as well a little bit, and I think the whole momentum shift whatever it was, whether it was the turn of play or whether it was the Darno home run or whether it was the seventh inning stretch, whatever happened that turned that offense and gave him a little bit of life, I think that's turned the whole series on its head. I really do. And I know momentum is such a massive thing. You've seen it. I just feel like if that game had gone another way, the series was over.
I tell people all the time, I think Travis d'Arno is, look, Carlos Correa, Derek Jeter, they seem to be in another stratosphere when we talk about postseason comfort. I think Travis d'Arno is so underrated as a postseason guy. Good Lord.
He's so even keeled. He never gets too emotional or too hard on himself. He didn't have a good game to that point. He threw the ball into center field. He's had a tough game to that point. So to come up with that home run and then to be on the field for the last out, it must have been huge. You don't see Matt Olson react that way. You don't see this team, the team of professionals that, you know, we do it the right way. And you know, it's been the team that everyone's looked to this year. So I think that was just such an emotional win and a gutsy win from a team that has basically had the run of the league the whole year, and they had to fight for their life, and they did.
So we've had a theme on the podcast in recent days when we had former players come on, and it's called "You Played and I Didn't." Okay, you played, and I, you know, got through high school playing baseball, but I didn't play at this level. As you're watching that the other night, and you see the way that the Phillies are pitching to Austin Riley, were you stunned that they wound up throwing him a breaking ball in that spot? Because I thought they would just keep attacking with fastballs.
I think, look, you look at the at-bat now and you think maybe they should have kept with the hard stuff, obviously. But who knows? Austin Riley, during that at-bat, felt like he was sitting on something off-speed the whole time. Obviously, go back and look at it now. But at the same time, who knows? He doesn't change that approach for that swing and all of a sudden want to ambush a fastball. So that's what makes this game so beautiful. It can't be scripted. And not to mention, you can have a plan of attack. You can say, hey, we're gonna attack Austin Riley this way, but you still have to execute. And they did such a good job executing up to that point. And it was just took a one-handed, beautiful swing from Austin to break it open. And look, I said the day before that when Ranger Suarez came out of the game and they had to use a lot of their big arms in that game one, I felt like that was a bit of an advantage because this team learns better than anyone once they've seen someone one time and the kind of approach that they have. But again, credit to the Phillies that the way they managed game one, the way that they've been able to carry that momentum, and that it's a good team. That's a superstar team. People don't give enough credit because of the win totals, but when they get in an environment like this, it's a different beast, and that's a good team, and this is going to be the best series we've seen in a long time.
What distinguishes Michael Harris as a center fielder? We spent some time on the podcast talking about his level of comfort, especially when he goes back to the warning track and near a fence, a place where you see a lot of outfielders kind of shy away, and I don't mean that as a criticism, just I think there's a comfort level that he has that a lot of outfielders don't have.
I think he's so comfortable with the field and any field that he goes to. He works so hard during BP to get a feel for that so that he knows exactly how many steps he takes to get to a spot. You saw he timed that run so perfectly to make that catch. And I will defend Bryce Harper and his decision to go, because sitting there at the game and watching the route that Michael took, there was a distinct moment where he felt like, and it looked like he took a step back and you almost saw his numbers instead of him tracking the ball. I think that's when Bryce decided, I'm going to go for it. But, you know, he makes that catch easy. He throws the ball into second base. Everybody's going bananas. And just to see his reaction, to see his reactions afterwards and to hear him talk about it, this is what he's going to be doing for a long, long time. And do you remember the highlight of the first catch he ever made where he had to use his bare hand to catch it instead of, I'm like, man, that's a tough read. But since then, he's read everything almost perfectly. And I got to witness Andrew at the end, but I still got to witness Andrew. And it's like there's people that can read balls a little differently than most. And I spent a lot of time shagging balls during BP in different environments, but these guys just run to a spot and know where it's going to be like no one else.
I thought it was really cool after the game to hear Brian Snitker, to hear the Braves players, to hear Bryce Harper, to hear JT talk about the other team. It feels like so much mutual respect between these two teams.
Everyone thinks it's hate. Everyone thinks, oh, you know, and look, the fan bases have a lot of words for each other and it's fun. It makes the game interesting. As long as it's respectful, I'm all for it. I sat next to the Phillies family section during the game the other day and Look, they were having the time of their lives when they were ahead, and so did the Braves fans. So I'm like, I think it's one of those games where it's one of those series where there's so much of a buildup because of the history. But you're right, the respect level between the managers, between the players, even Acuna and Harper, when they had that little moment, you know, you keep doing what you're going to do. Like, that's good for the game. Harper dealt with that nonsense when he came up. He's the one that broke down those walls. I was there. I witnessed it. I was part of the problem. I was one of the old dudes. Get off the couch. You're too young. Shut up. I had to change because the game changed. And there's excitement now. There's none of the old bull shit that we used to deal with back in the day that we have to deal with now. And I think it's just been so good for the game. And I think these young superstars are changing it. They're so good. They're so fast. It's so fun to watch.
So as you're talking, this jumped out of me. This is, for me, it's like the baseball version of Federer and Nadal, where you just feel like, you know, that these two sides, you know, no matter who loses, there's going to be a handshake at the end.
Exactly. And even when you go to the American League too, you look at now, I mean, it looks like obviously Texas and Houston are lining up if the Twins can't come back, but that side's looking like it's going to be a behemoth battle as well. So I think, honestly, whoever comes out of this one is going to have a tough fight. It's not just going to be a walk through to the World Series victory either.
All right. The last 48 hours, you know that the Braves coaching staff has been talking a lot about the question about who starts game three. And just working with sources yesterday, what I believe this is going to come down to is something really simple, because we know this. They're going to have to use their whole bullpen for this game. Mm. You could go with a traditional starter, Bryce Elder. You could go with an opener. I think it's going to come down to it. And, you know, Sarah Langs dug out this great number for me. In this postseason, 18% of the runs have been scored in the first inning. We've seen it time and again, okay? And that is compared to 12% during the regular season. And I think the Braves, in the end, their choice is going to be who is going to get us out of the gates the best.
Who's
in that crazy atmosphere.
Inning.
What?
In the shutdown inning. That zero to start off the shutdown inning.
What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't. I think there's three choices. I honestly do. I think you could see traditional Bryce Elder. You could see A.J. Smith-Shava, who the Phillies haven't seen a lot. Or you could see maybe Brad Hand get through Harper.
Yeah,
and
that's
then have
a great
somebody
call right there.
Have somebody ready to go after. Maybe have Bryce. I don't think you'll have Bryce ready to go because he's obviously started the whole year. You'd have somebody maybe come in to get out of that inning if you need to, but you're looking at maybe blowing two relievers early in the game just to get through that first inning too. So there's so much that can happen, and obviously the decision's going to be looked at afterwards, whether it's a good or a bad one, depending on what happens. So I think they have the backup of being able to cover a lot of innings with Smith-Shava and with Elder today. But again, that leaves game four open as well. So that's, you have to go for today. I think the winner of game three obviously holds a massive, massive advantage. So you've got to go all in with whatever you can do. But you also got to realize that if you get down by a few and it looks, you've got to pull the chute at some point and save some of you guys for tomorrow.
You got a strong feeling either way about how this turns out.
I don't. I think it's going to go to game five. I would love to see the Braves win. And I hope
you'll be there standing on a seat. Right?
I'm going to be standing on anything I can get my feet under if we can get this to a game five. I hope we win two, the next two, and we don't have to worry about game five. But if it comes to game five, I'm definitely going to be there. I think we're going to have to, like you said, early on, if we can get Nola on the ropes early, first inning is so important against Nola because if he gets in a rhythm, if we can get a base runner, if Acuna reaches, changes everything. He's got to speed up. I know he's worked on his pickoffs, but there's no way you can work on your pickoffs enough to be able to speed up your delivery to hold Ronald at first base. So Ronald reaches. If Ozzy's in the two hole like he should be, that speed that we can get going, that's going to be a factor against Nola today.
All right. Before we go, I want to ask you about where the Dodgers are in vis-a-vis Clayton Kershaw. They're down 2-0. And so the Dodgers are not only, I think, you know, trying to extend their season tonight, but I think they're also planning to get the ball back into Clayton Kershaw's hand. I think there's a real chance this is it for him, that he's going to retire after the season. He's had so many physical issues. And so if the Dodgers can win today, then Clayton Kershaw at least will get one more start. So that outing the other day is not his last start, and he had a more appropriate landing. Tell me about the respect for Kershaw, the feelings about Kershaw within the sport.
I had the pleasure of my short time with the Dodgers. I was actually locker mates between Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw. Peter Moylan was in between Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw, and he has been the benchmark for pitching, not just left-handed pitching, but pitching for my whole time in the big league since the minute he came up here. I don't know what happens in the playoffs. I know he's had a handful of games that have been exceptional, but that can't be his last game. And I think that if he comes into a game today, whether it be out of the bullpen just to, as a last hurrah, I think you might see something along the lines of blowing it all out. You might see velo we haven't seen in years. He may actually go for it. If this is it, you may see him completely go back to the way that he was. But then where does that put the Dodgers? Is it, if it's a close game, do you say, hey, Clayton, we want you to hold it for us? Is that the situation you put him in?
Yeah, no, I don't think he's going to pitch. I think they're saving him for that start. And, you know, I think everybody, not that the Dodgers are necessarily playing for Clayton Kershaw today, but if they were able to win today, then it gives Kershaw the ball at least one more time.
I just hate,
you know, Sandy Koufax, the last game that he pitched in the major leagues, you know, this amazing career. He's got Cy Young Awards, 1966 World Series. He starts game two against the Baltimore Orioles. Willie Davis makes three errors in one inning, and he has this ugly outing. And then a month later, he announces his retirement. I don't want that for Clayton. I think he's been better than that, you know, you know what I mean?
But what other options are there? If they lose today, does he try to come back that would be such a bad way to end his career. That it can't end that way. It can't end that way.
I hope not. And at the same time, I mean, you know him. I mean, Ellen, his wife, is so great. He's going to be doing stuff in retirement for years to come. But just all the physical issues, piling up on him. So we'll see. Peter, thank you. That was so much fun watching your video and your reaction to that game the other day.
That's the first time that I've been in the stands with one of my kids. And she was clearly embarrassed, but that's what dads do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm a big fan, and I'm not sure if she noticed that, but I'm a baseball fan, and Braves have given me the opportunity to be here. I'm still here after my WBC performance 15 years ago, so they can't get rid of me yet.
Yeah, you sent me a direct message on Wednesday morning. You're just like, I love baseball.
I love baseball. I really do. You can't script it, and there's no way that you can predict it.
0-0-9-6. This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, who's laughing at the moment because as we're talking on the Zoom, we see Taylor fending off Dolly, his dog, like she's an invader into the castle, Sarah, and you can't contain yourself.
I mean, she is so adorable. She's well established. I love everybody's dog. All the videos and photos you send me of Quinny. And when I logged onto Zoom, the first thing I saw was Dolly in the background doing something, and Taylor was like, "Hi, Sarah," knowing that I was reacting to that.
Nice. So, you know, what's interesting is I can't remember if I told you this, but I asked your mom when we did that that documentary on you. I said, what is Sarah's connection with dogs? Did you guys have dogs growing up? And she was totally befuddled by it. She was completely perplexed by the question of where that your love for dogs came from, because you didn't have one.
And I was terrified of dogs when I was a kid. I mean, growing up in New York City, you walk down the street, and dog starts barking. Like, I was always afraid of that. We had a neighbor who I will leave nameless, who had a dog I was very, very afraid of, who would bark every time I was in the hallway. But my best friend, Hewan, has two dogs. She got the first dog, Kevin, about a year after we graduated college. And the moment I met Kevin, I was like, yeah, dogs are perfect. Let's go. So I give all credit to Hewan and Kevin Park.
All right, Bruce Bochy, your friend, has taken a team again to the League Championship Series. The Rangers moving on. This is someone you met when you were a teenager. What was your reaction as you're watching Bosch get sprayed with champagne?
I was just so excited for him. I think I said out loud, like, Bosch, I'm so happy for him. And I was texting my mom in all caps. I mean, I love to see that he is having this success. And I love that I mean, I watch all the postgame coverage, and I think that Corey Seager, Max Scherzer, Marcus Semien, everyone was asked about his influence on Nathaniel Lowe as well. And they all had the same answer. They all talked about how even and calm he is, the expectations he has, the standards he holds them to. But it was amazing because I feel like I heard the same answer four times as if they planned it beforehand, but they didn't. And that just tells you how genuine they are about him. It was really, really cool to hear, especially from Max Scherzer, who said he's been lucky to play for so many incredible managers. And you think about all of the managers he's played for, it is really, really incredible. And just talking about how great it has been to play for Bosch. So it's just so fun to see him in this situation. And I'm really excited for the entire team.
So when I was watching the postgame interview, it reminded me of that story. I'm sure I've told you at some point about when he was with the Giants, and I think it was the year when Travis Ishikawa hit that, you know, the walk-off home run to put the Giants into the World Series. And SportsCenter was having me do interviews. And so they asked me to go up into the Giants clubhouse and grab someone, you know, a player, if you can get Jake Peavy, if you can get whoever. And so I walked into their clubhouse, and as you know, the manager's door is right to your left when you walk in, and there's Boach, who I've known, you know, when I played pickup basketball with him in San Diego. And so he said, hey, can you come out and do an interview? And he looked at me and he goes, you know, Buster, I've had a few. Like, he took some shots or something, a whiskey. And I was like, I'll tell you what, Boach, come down. And if I sense that you might be in a little bit of trouble, then I'll just cut off the interview and send it back to studio. That's Bruce Bochy. He had the biggest grin. He came down. He did the interview. He did a great job, but no one could tell that he had a couple of All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 15. So let's start with Bochy. Last night was the 15th time that his team has won a postseason round. That is the third most of any manager in postseason history, and he's coming up on the others. So Joe Torre with 19, Antonio La Russa with 16. And he is the seventh manager to reach the LCS with at least three franchises, but no manager has won an LCS with three teams. There are two managers to reach a World Series with two teams, Bill McKechnie and Dick Williams, but they did so in part before their roles, yes. So if they were to reach the World Series, he would be joining that list, but also setting one of his own.
Number two
is zero. Basically, however you slice it, for Christian Javier. So he comes out and he has another start where he goes at least five innings and doesn't allow a run. He's allowed either one or zero hits in his three career postseason starts. So he was already the first pitcher in postseason history with consecutive postseason starts of at least five innings, allowing one or zero hits. He's now done in three straight. And I know that's a product of modern pitching guys and used to get taken out at a point where they hadn't allowed hit, like in the World Series last year, but it's still pretty remarkable. Now, if we talk about the runs, he is the fourth pitcher in postseason history with at least three straight scoreless starts of at least five innings. Whitey Ford had four straight. Kenny Rogers had three straight. And Christy Mathewson, of course, in 1905 had three straight.
Of course.
I mean, you know he's going to be on this list. And yes, Javier has thrown fewer innings than the other guys I mentioned, but it's still really incredible what he has done.
Number one is
24. So we've talked about this already, but it felt really important to bring back today. The Phillies are 24-11 at Citizens Bank Park in the postseason since the ballpark opened. That 686 winning percentage is the best of any team in any ballpark with at least 20 games in the postseason. I have actually the Mets at Shea, 667, and the Cardinals at Busch Stadium at 660. So that is, to me, the most important thing as we look to tonight or this late afternoon, right, 5 p.m. I don't know if that's night exactly, but in Philadelphia with this series shifting, I mean, if you go to the intangibles, it's like a crash of intangibles because you have this team that just won a postseason game in a way no one ever had before with that outfielder-started double play by Michael Harris and the Braves. And then you would deem that every time you see that ballpark in the postseason, you were just there, what, a week ago? Time goes so fast this time of year. And I was there last November and October, and you sit there and it feels like there's no way they could lose a game there. It just seems like a crazy kind of confluence of what on earth is going to happen.
Yeah, it was a week ago that I had beer and champagne poured all over me. And Sarah, I'm just going to report that I gave up the idea of rehabilitating my shoes that I was wearing at that time.
Oh,
they're
no.
in the garbage here at the hotel. Like, and I'm expensing ESPN for those. I'm sending it on my expense report. I'll ask you the same question that I asked Peter Moylan. Do you have a gut feel as to what's going to happen now? What is a best of three series, Braves Phillies?
Oh my gosh! I mean, you know, we saw this happen last year in this way, and the Phillies took the series. I do think these Phillies are better than last year's, but I also think the Braves are a little bit more feeling like everyone counted us out after one game. We won 104 games. We have Ronald Acuna Jr., one of the best players on the planet right now. So I picked the Phillies, so I feel like I have to go with that, but I'm feeling much more confident in the Braves at this point than I would have last year. And I really think that I hope it goes five. I wish it could go seven or 10, or I mean, I guess we had the whole regular season for that, but I'm really excited to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I've been comparing this to Ollie Frazier, but as you know, Ollie and Frazier were not warm. And so when I was talking to Peter, I came up with Nadal Federer. That's the way it feels like. There's great respect between these two sides as they play this out. We'll see what happens there. All right, Sarah, good to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. Gregory Gosnell, Carl's Jr. 9982 writes in, how did the AL beast crumble so quickly? Were there team's roster construction flaws, Yankees righties, Orioles lack of reliable pitching, Rays injuries, Jays prioritizing the homer, or was it the first round bye?
Taylor, what do you want? Yeah, here, I'll let you answer this one.
Well, Yankees roster construction for sure problematic. The Jays just weirdly inconsistent. I felt like every time the Orioles played them, every time I watched them, like there was a lot of good stuff happening there, and I would definitely have been afraid to play them in the playoffs, but just lack of consistency. Rays injuries, yeah, I think that just caught up to him. The Wander Franco situation doesn't help. And then the Orioles, I don't know, man. I guess it's experience. It's hard to put your finger on it when the team just like completely
go get
implodes.
Pitching. Go get some starting pitching.
Right. I know, but like, what are the odds that Kyle Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez are just going to have their worst outings of the entire season? I mean,
yeah, I'm not criticizing him for what happened in this series. I'm talking about going forward.
Yeah.
You know, as
yeah.
you talk about the American League East, I just think that there's a learning curve for all of these young players.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you get a Jeter or Correa who can handle the postseason. But I think all the Orioles are going to learn so much from this run through. Like, okay, we're ready for that. We know what that adrenaline feels like. We know not to slide head first into home plate without cutting up our face.
the plate discipline was horrific throughout the entire series. And that's like one thing they were really good at all year. So, you're right. It's probably an adrenaline thing. Definitely need another starting pitcher. Probably need a veteran bat. It gets kind of tricky when you have all these prospects. You know, your outfield is pretty solid. Like, who do they move? Are they going to look for that piece? Are they going to stay inside the organization? There's just a lot of questions, Orioles fans are processing this morning.
Well, and that's why John Angelos needs to make it clear that he's willing to spend. Because what I've heard from other teams is they believe that, you know, Mike Elias is very careful, conservative with his prospects, in part because he know he takes at face value what John Angelos is saying. We can't afford the players, which means he's going to be careful to keep his guys. If Angelos comes out and gives a couple of these guys whopper contracts, sign Gunnar Henderson, you know, sign Adley Rutschman, whatever it is, I think that's going to free up Mike to do more, if that makes sense. The feeling that, okay, we've got some money coming in terms of trying as we decide how to you know, improve our pitching staff.
Yeah. Sean Sullivan at 4U Kevin writes, and so Taylor, the first memory you'll have of the 2023 season will be, well, not great, but what will your second better memory be of the season? Hope you have a good winter, and John Angelos opens the books just for you. I wouldn't say my first memory of the season will be bad, because I'll just remember winning the AL East and how fun that night was that they clinched, and the whole run-up to it. You know, it's a bummer, but you know, I think of that 2012 team that I loved, that, you know, that won that first round game against the Rangers, but then got beat by the Yankees. Like, I don't harp on, you know, I don't think about the Yankees loss in the ALDS. I think about how much fun that team was and winning that first, you know, wild card game. So it's not all bad. Let's go to Michael Mahone at Eater of Cheeses writes in, will Taylor be offering a retraction of his negative comments on the FanGraphs playoff odds following the O's sweep? Seems only fair. Yes, I am sorry, FanGraphs. It seems you were, you know, sort of on the money with your World Series percentages, but I will not apologize for attacking you for your regular season power rankings, which were still garbage.
So, Sarah, I mean, look at all these people, all these comments flowing in for Taylor, okay, which undercuts the argument all year that we haven't talked about the Orioles enough, okay? Right, Sarah?
Yeah, we can officially put that to bed, I think.
Does Buster, is it official? Is it? It's October 11th, 2023. It's about 10:06. Buster only, you can no longer claim that he hates the Orioles because he's let me, you know, set up a small property on the podcast to talk about them every day.
Right, in therapy session as well now as we move forward.
let's talk some snakes here. Mark O writes in, really enjoying watching the young, exciting Diamondbacks team. How about Torey Lovello for NL Manager of the Year?
Yeah, and he would be, you know, for me, a terrific candidate. But I always think the Manager of the Year is picked based on expectation versus performance. I think there was a thought this year that the Diamondbacks, you know, after finishing strongly this year could have a good year this year. I think that expectation versus performance ratio, the winner of that is probably Skip Schumacher of the Marlins. So I think that there's a good chance he's going to win National League Manager of the Year. We'll see. I think Snitker obviously is a great candidate. Rob Thompson's a great candidate. You know, I think Craig Council every year could be a candidate. I think the Manager of the Year award is one of the silliest awards, but we got to pick one. And I think that expectation versus performance ratio decides it.
Last one for today, John Lewis at Johnny Ball Game 44 writes in, why don't we talk more about Christian Walker? He's a superstar hiding in plain sight. What makes him so boring and anonymous?
Well, first off, John, I mean, the fact is he plays with the Diamondbacks who don't get as much of attention. They just made the playoffs. And I'm going to push back on the superstar label. Like, I think he's a really good player, but I looked it up this morning. His highest adjusted OPS in his career is 125, right? It's not 160. It's not 170. He's not in the MVP conversation. He's been a really good professional, as Taylor knows, as we, you know, go back to the Oriole days, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. All right, there's your snakes talk, everyone. Looking forward to all the games tonight. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets while you're watching. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That was a fun podcast today.
Oh, yeah.
That's it for today. My thanks to Peter Moylan, to Sarah Eduardo, Sarah and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.